Ready to take a trip to the world? You found the Be Our Guest Walt Disney World Trip Planning Podcast. This is where your memories come front and center on our podcast stage.
Welcome to episode 182 of the Be Our Guest Walt Disney World Trip Planning Podcast. I'm your host, Mike Rahman from BeOurGuestPodcast.com and Magical Mouse Radio, which can be heard on Live365.com. And we hope that you had a great weekend, and we appreciate you starting your week with us here on the show. Today, we have a great guest, and we're going to talk some Disney on both coasts. We're going to talk some Walt Disney World, a little bit of Disneyland, and also talk about the newest app that is out there for the iPhone and other smartphones at the same time. We have Henry from TouringPlans.com. How's it going, Henry?
Hey, Mike. Thanks for having me on.
Anytime. And we just had Len on a couple weeks ago, so some big shoes to fill here.
Yeah, I know. It's a Touring Plans overload. I'm sorry for all your guests.
No, trust me. We're all fans of everything you guys do. I'm a definite huge fan because, like I told Len, the little things that you guys do, you know, that you've grown over the years, you know, as far as how specific the touring plans have gotten, you know, to having little kids, the Dumbo or Die, you know, things like that. It's really appreciated because I've moved from different aspects in my life personally when I was just going down by myself and then with my wife and now with kids. So everything you guys do really does make our Disney trips a little bit better.
Yeah, thanks a lot for that. I mean, most of the credit goes to Len and Fred and Bob have been doing it for years. I'm a recent employee. Recently joined the cult of the unofficial guide myself, but yeah, I mean, like, as Disney World vacations have gone, you know, they've grown longer in days. The resort has grown bigger. You know, Disneyland is growing really big now, and so, you know, we have a lot of things to cover. And so, thanks for that.
No problem. Well, let's start off with kind of what you just mentioned. You know, how did you become associated with Touring Plans? Because you know, I know there's a lot of folks out there that say they would like to collect stats for the unofficial guide and stuff like that because you are at a Disney park and we're all big Disney fanatics. But how did you make that connection?
Yeah, so I've been reading the unofficial guide for years and years. I think probably my first one was 94 or 95. I'm pretty young though. I'm only 25, so I don't really know the really old school days. But I'm a web developer. I used to work at a tech blog called TechCrunch. And I just found the unofficial guide. I found touringplans.com on the internet. I knew about it for a while, but they had some help wanted. I started working with Len on some small projects, and then I got to go to a couple of their research trips. To one, I met them in Vegas, and then two, I met them in their Disneyland research trip in the spring. And then I sort of just convinced them to take me full time. I mean, I've loved Disney for years and years and years, and I'm really big into web development and sort of building up internet properties. So it's kind of like a good mix, and I'm really excited. Like, I haven't really worked on the website very much yet. We've been mostly focused on lines, which we'll talk about in a second. But I'm really excited about sort of where the convergence of Disney and technology. I think it's a pretty cool time.
Yeah, and it's like you said, the convergence of the two, and it's happening very, very quickly here in the last couple of years, you know, with the prevalence of iPhones and just the higher capabilities of smartphones. I think that this is going to become more and more an integral part of every Disney vacation.
Right, yeah. So, I mean, Touring Plans is all about that. Like, we've produced a book, and it's fantastic, and, you know, it's 850 pages. It's really long, and it's good. But, you know, the website was the first thing that we could do to sort of provide higher levels of sort of planning, higher levels of just sort of information. And, you know, we could update it. Obviously, we could update it more quickly, but we could provide tools like the least expensive ticket calculator that we have on our site, or we have a free trip planner. We do personalized touring plans, so you can sort of pick which attractions that you want, and you can get a nice sheet printed out with a map. And, you know, we actually include Lou Mangello's trivia on that, as well as weather. the website has been doing that for years, and I think that's great. And so what's really cool, obviously, that you just mentioned, is the mobile devices. So the fact that you can, you know, we can give you tools to help you plan your Disney vacation. And then, you know, we've always given you touring plans to help you on the day if you want to do really efficient stuff. But now we can actually improve the sort of in-park experience, like, in real time, using data from people in the parks, but also historical data that we've collected over the past decade.
Yeah, and I think that's the advantage of lines, and we'll talk about that at this time, because I know a lot of folks have heard about it by now, but maybe somebody hasn't heard about this, and I'll tell you that I've been on my iPhone a lot on lines, you know, in the last couple of weeks, and I'm not at Walt Disney World, but it just amazes me because, and there have been apps for the iPhone that have attempted to do this over the past, I'd say 6 months, because I've, you know, I've looked at them, and anything that says Disney on the iPhone App Store, I download and give a shot.
Oh, but me too, definitely.
but the thing is, I think that's great about lines is that, like you just said, you're using historical data as well as user inputted data to kind of give you the best picture of your wait times and, you know, kind of give you a chance to be fluid in your touring plan to say, you know what, I might be able to deviate right now because this is showing that.
Yeah, so we've wanted to do something mobile for a long time, and they've wanted to do, before I joined, they wanted to do something, you know, in the mobile space. And there's obviously lots of cooler things that we could come up with. But sort of the thing that when I joined, I was like, okay, we could do this well. We have a mountain of data. We know the attractions very well. We know the crowd patterns. We have our crowd calendar on our website that helps us predict how crowded each day is going to be over the next year, so you can do long-range planning. So we decided to put all this together into a mobile sort of package. And you're right. So that most of the apps that have come before us do this thing where they sort of, okay, they have to have a lot of people in the park and, mm-hmm. you know, everyone sort of relays information around. And that's not bad. I mean, I'm really thankful that that existed, that,
yeah,
you know, people have been trying to do this. Like, it's a tough problem. And so what we're trying to bring into, as you said, is this historical data that we've built up. And also just, we have a full-time statistician. I mean, not a full-time, but we have a part-time statistician who helps us out. Fred, he's awesome. He's been working for the guide for years. And he helps us do models about what the attractions are going to be like for every single day. And then we could combine that with, you know, the amount of people that use our books and use our website. So we already have sort of an existing audience to market mm-hmm. to. And so, you know, over the past like week, we've gotten more data over the last like week or two than we've gotten in the past like 3 months spending our own money and our own time doing it. And so it's really awesome to see, you know, a lot of people using it. And what we're trying to do basically, so I'll give you the basic introduction. So Lines is our mobile website. So it's not a native application. You can't get it on the App Store. You just go to a website, and it looks pretty darn close to a native application.
Yeah, it does. It looks just like one.
Yeah, and we're doing this. We'll hopefully eventually come out with a native app, but we're doing this so we can get it to as many different platforms as possible, because mm-hmm. the more people that are in the park and using it, you know, the more valuable it is. And also, we have a pretty small team, so we can't develop natively for like 30 different platforms. So if you go to m.touringplans.com, it's a website that lists the current and future wait times for every attraction in Walt Disney World. So yeah, so that's basically it. So we take all this data that we've gotten over the past 10 years or so. We do statistical models on it. So we basically say, okay, for this type of day based on park hours or how close it is to a holiday or various other factors, we can basically model what we think the whole day is going to be. And then as we get in data from users, we can correct that on the fly. Well, that way we can tell you stuff in the future. So, you know, the classic example of why you need to use this is like you're on one side of the park and you want to find out like what's going on at Space Mountain if you're standing in Frontierland, right? Mm-hmm. So that's the obvious one. But the cool thing is that we can be like, okay, you're sitting at lunch, and are there going to be fast passes left at Toy Story Mania after lunch? Or, you know, what is, like, I'm in another park, what are the wait times going to be like at Epcot if I'm standing in the Magic Kingdom? So we can do, like, when I get there. So we can do cool stuff, not just like, okay, what's happening right now and what is Disney saying right now? But we can sort of smooth all the data out, give you future estimates, give you a different estimate. And, yeah, we think it's pretty cool.
Well, that's what I thought, you know, one of the beauties of it was, you know, again, I've been playing with it a lot here at home, wishing I was down at the parks and can't wait to use it here in about 30 days. But like you said, there's many times where, and this really is important for people that hold annual passes or, you know, have park hopper options on their Magic Your Way tickets. But you wonder, you know, am I making a good choice leaving Epcot at 3 o'clock, you know, and heading over to the Magic Kingdom? Because you never know, you know, you have a good guess looking at the unofficial guide. But I think that this you know, Lines is going to really give us some more information that maybe is more accurate for the day, you know, or for just for the evening even.
Right. Yeah. And we're trying to do a lot of stuff with the amount of people that we're getting using the parks. Like we've had a lot of usage already and we're really excited about that. And so, you know, we're trying to build up our systems in terms of reporting when lines or attractions are closed. Mm-hmm. So like, you know, especially for attractions that go down a lot, like Space Mountain has actually been going down a lot and it's sort of messing up our models because it's so, it's up and down. The other thing is that like we could potentially like, so say for the next big attraction opening or for the next big soft opening, we could be like, we could literally have a sort of an in-park reporting system just amongst users. Let's say, you know, oh, hey, this attraction's open, come now. Or, you know, the attraction's not open, come back later.
That's a great idea because there are so many times where you're excited. I was down there when Toy Story Mania was getting ready to open and you hear rumors, but if you had some kind of an alert system on something like that, it would be really useful.
Right. Yeah. And as we said, we don't have these issues where like we're going to give you good estimates no matter how many people are in the parks. So that's pretty cool. And then we actually think that we're going to have a decent amount of usage anyway. The other thing I want to mention is that like if you've been monitoring, we're sort of Magic Kingdom. Our estimates are really solid. So currently lines is in a beta mode. Mm-hmm. So you can log in right now and access it for free on your iPhone, Palm Pre, or Android phone. And I think this episode's coming out on Monday. So we're working on BlackBerry pretty furiously. And I believe this is kind of a BR Guest exclusive. I think we'll have BlackBerry out by the end of the week or at least by Monday. So if you're a BlackBerry user, go check it out now. m.touringplans.com. And I also want to mention that we have a lot of other cool things like sort of built into the app. So the primary focus is just focused on like, okay, what's the picture of the park or in each attraction today? But we're also providing park hours, EMH schedules, and we integrated our crowd calendar. Mm-hmm. So you can see which are estimates of what the best park is that day. So like say if you're sitting in your hotel room and you're debating which park to go to, at least that's what I do all the time.
Yeah.
We can sort of nudge you and we can give you another data point that you can make an informed decision.
Very nice. And that's what it's all about down at Walt Disney World. It's kind of just gathering the data and making your best guess, because sometimes, you're not always going to the right park, but at least you have statistical historical data that's going to get you hopefully in the right place to have the best day you can.
Yeah, yeah. And the other thing I just want to say is that we're still working on our data. Like we think in a month from now we'll be, you know, 5 times more accurate than we are right now. So our Magic Kingdom estimates are pretty good, and so we're sort of like we're trying to retool things for Hollywood Studios, Epcot, and Animal Kingdom.
Cool. Well, the thing is that it sounds like this is going to be something that the more it gets used in the parks, the more it's going to benefit all of us who want to use it in the future and at that time too. So hopefully everybody does check this out. I'm telling you, I've been on this a lot, and you know, I'll be at school on my lunch hour and just checking it out and seeing that, you know, there's a 20-minute wait at Toy Story Mania, and I never get that in June, you know, so it makes me want to run down to Florida. So it is fun even at home just to mess with, and especially when you're getting ready to plan a trip, just check it out. It's really, really cool.
Yeah, cool. Thanks a lot for that.
No problem. Well, let's take a break here and talk about your busy day that you had out of Disneyland. Oh, what was that, about 3 months ago?
Maybe a little longer? Yeah, no. So we did Disneyland about a month ago, and okay. Then I actually did a Magic Kingdom like in late August.
That's the one I was thinking of, was the Magic Kingdom, because I was watching it. Yeah. So and that's, you know, I think everybody has a pretty good solid background of what it takes to tour the Magic Kingdom. So we're talking about your ultimate touring plan of, you made the attempt to see every attraction in the Magic Kingdom in one day.
Yeah, so this has been an unofficial guide, like sort of plan for a while. So back in the day, Len decided to see, based on Bob, our the author of the unofficial guide series, asked Len, the co-author, to see if you could do a touring plan in which you actually saw everything in the park. So that can mean like 450 attractions. And also set up some rules about like what it means to experience each attraction. So like if you go to Tom's Horizon, you have to stay on Tom's Horizon for 15 minutes.
I was going to say, I could picture like Chevy Chase at the Grand Canyon, you know, like, yep, okay, let's go.
Exactly. he set out this plan, and I think the first one that was completed in like 2004, 2005, and we have a list up on our website. And so we, like, my dad and I did it in late August. I think it was like on the 26th or something. The park was open. It was like the only day that we were there. We were there for like 6 days, and the only day that we were there, it had extra morning magic hours. Mm-hmm. So we thought that was like a good, you know, a good way to get a jump on the day. Plus, we just have more hours in the day to actually achieve it. So we Len sort of, you know, updated his plan with you know, all the latest attractions, and you have to go sort of go through to see, okay, what attractions are being refurbished right now. And then so basically we managed to complete it, and we did it in about a little over 12 hours. And it was grueling, man. It was a long day. The cool thing was is that I don't force myself typically to see everything, although I'm trying to do it now more that I'm sort of in a research organization. But like, when you see everything in one day, you gain a really good appreciation for like the amount of attractions that they actually do all the time. Like the shows, you have to go to every single show. And it's just like, it's, you actually come away with like really good appreciation for the Magic Kingdom and like the cast members that staff it every day.
Yeah, no
kidding. There's just so many different types of attractions that appeal to different people, and they pull it off like every single day of the year. It's just mind boggling.
It is. I mean, that's the thing I tell my wife sometimes is that you got to realize that Walt Disney World is a place that goes 24/7, 365. I mean, you know, because we have in St. Louis, we have like a Six Flags, but right. It goes down in October, you know, and they have right. The whole winter time in the spring to get it ready for the next season. This right. is a continuous operation. And like you said, it's amazing the variety of attractions you're going to see. And I could imagine that doing that all in one day, you said it was grueling, but did you have any pitfalls during the day where you thought you weren't going to make it? Or was there anything that really surprised you?
We knew Len was sort of monitoring us, like our progress, and it was fun because, like, as we were talking about with mobile devices, like, it's really cool, and I think it's new in the Disney community in, like, the last year is that, like, with Twitter and Facebook and just, you know, people in the parks with good smartphones, like, they're sending back their experiences, like, constantly. Like, if you're just bored today, you can jump into the Twitter Disney stream and find people are in the parks tweeting back pictures, talking about their lunch reservations, you know, like talking about Illuminations or whatever, like every single day. Like personally, I'm still waiting for the day that they live stream Illuminations.
Me too.
Like, I know they have the videos, but that's not good enough for me.
I agree.
So it's really cool that like, and I think this is what you're following. Like I tried to, you know, be very furious with my tweeting. Sending my pictures and stuff just because I thought it was pretty fun, and people were sending me back a lot of support, which is cool. So I was like, you know, 23 attractions done, and I'm not sure if we're gonna make it all the way, and blah blah blah. So that I think that's pretty cool, like how the sort of social networks and the social media are sort of like not just relaying your experiences back to other people, but also I think they kind of enhance your own experience while you're down there.
Oh, I totally agree. And I was talking to Ricky, who's one of our co-hosts on Fridays, that, you know, I remember, and she's your age too, by the way, and I feel a little bit older now. Usually I'm the young guy, but now I'm the old guy. But, you know, I remember that, when that's no problem, but I just remember, you know, 10 years ago when it was great to, you know, to pick up a guidebook from Disney and you really got a piece of it, you know, that's kind of how you experienced it. And then you got on the internet and you would see, right. You know, places like the Disboards, you know, they're the biggest and they're, you know, the first, but they would have, you know, trip reports from like 2 weeks ago. And you're like, man, that's right. Only 2 weeks ago. And it's it, the immediacy of it now is just amazing. I mean, like you said, on Twitter, you know, within 2 minutes, you can be walking around with somebody literally in the parks with them.
Right, right. It's a brave new world, Mike.
Yes,
so,
it is.
It's going to be pretty cool, and I'm pretty excited to see where that goes, like where the whole trip report, live trip report sort of thing goes, because I think there's ways to do it better and more interesting. So anyway, we'll see how that goes. But yeah, so the Ultimate Touring Play was a blast. It's very difficult, and do we have any pitfalls? We didn't technically complete the entire thing, I guess, because we missed one attraction, which was the Main Street vehicles. So the Main Street vehicles typically have operating hours between like 9 and 1.
Okay.
And but the problem is that late August they stuff it with a ton of shows just to, you know, suck up more capacity.
Sure.
But there's, you know, it's called like Dream Along with Mickey. It's a castle show, like mm-hmm. right in front of the castle. Whenever they have a really early show of that, they don't do the vehicle, they close the vehicles even earlier. So you actually, like, you know, you walk, because the castle show sort of takes it up and they can't drive by it. So that was our big pitfall. Then I should also say that I did the same thing in Disneyland. So like a month ago, and we sort of charted the waters with like the first Disneyland Ultimate Touring Plan, and we actually did all 51 attractions that day. And it's, and what's cool is that each touring plan, Ultimate Touring Plan day, is different. So, you know, you may go on a day that's in February where there's only, the park is only open for 10 hours and a bunch of things are closed, right? Or you may do it on July 4th when everything is open but the crowds are way worse. So yeah, it's pretty cool because there, like, there's technically a way that, like, we sort of have a top 10 sort of, you know, we keep track of who the best record is, but it's kind of sketchy because it changes daily.
Now, I've also followed this, and isn't it true that somebody did complete the touring plan on the 4th of July? Because I thought that was pretty ironic.
Yeah, Kelsey, one of our researchers, did with her family. I think she did it twice on July 3rd.
Oh, man. Because I've been down there that time, and the crowds are massive. But I guess, I mean, that's just singing the praises of having a good touring plan that you can get it done.
Yeah, it's definitely a testament to Len's touring plans, but also it's, I think there are more cast members staffing July 3rd and July 4th than there are like any other day of the year, I'm sure. And they push their rides to capacity very quickly, whereas, you know, on a normal day they might start with one or two trains at Big Thunder Mountain. My guess is that on July 3rd they start with like four or five. Like they try to, you know, cycle people through as much as humanly possible. So it's good. It's kind of cool because it's like each day has its pros and cons.
Cool. Well, let's tell us about the trip out to Disneyland, and what do you think would be different for somebody who is, you know, a veteran Magic Kingdom goer, but they haven't been to Disneyland? Is there anything that they should really consider? I mean, we know the history and Walt built that park and that's where it all started, but from a practical aspect of seeing as much as you can while you're out at Disneyland, what would you encourage our listeners to do?
So this is actually really relevant. That's a really great question for me, just because I used to live on the East Coast, and I went to I've gone to Disney World about like every year since I was born. My parents are big nuts too. hi mom, hi dad. Then I moved to California about 2 years ago, and so I've started to go to Disneyland much more. Like originally it was just like once a year, and now it's like, now I've gone like three times in the past 3 months.
How nice. So
I'm official annual pass holder there, and so I go off, and I'm going again during Christmas, which should be crazy, but whatever. But Disneyland is really cool. So the only thing, so coming from being a Disney World person, right, and then going to Disneyland, there are a couple of things you should take, you know, note of. One is just that the park is smaller and the castle is much smaller. That's very jarring for me, at least. And, you know, everything is kind of like weird, sort of like alternate universe, because like there are things that look the same, but they're slight, the paths are laid differently, or, you know, there's a New Orleans Square instead of, you know, a Liberty Square or whatever, and Haunted Mansion's a different side of Rivers of America, and there's all these things that are sort of different, right? But I've really grown to have a really great appreciation for Disneyland, and the cast members that I know, like the really hardcore Disney fan cast members that go to both parks, they're also like really in love with Disneyland. So I think for a regular, someone who goes to Disney World every year and hasn't gone to Disneyland, you should make a trip. Well, and you should buy the unofficial guide to Disneyland. She doesn't, Ted.
Very good. Yeah, we like pushing that because it's a great resource. And I have in our living room we have like one of those leaning shelves that my wife uses to decorate, and we have, you know, copies of the classics up there, and my unofficial guide's right alongside them. So, you know,
that's awesome.
There.
So, thank you.
No problem. But so you kind of had me surprised there, because I thought you were somebody that grew up on the West Coast, because of, you know, that's where you are right now. So let's kind of talk about how this all started for you, like how you even got involved. I mean, you said your parents took you all the time, but where was that first push kind of into the Internet Disney community, or where you got really involved with making it more than just your annual trip, or, you know, a couple times a year? When did you find out that, you know, Disney is really cool, and I really do have an affinity for it?
Yeah, so I probably got sucked in as a kid, like most kids do, if their parents, you know, take them. We have family friends in Florida, and so we would like go to the hang out at their place for a few days, and then go to Disney for one or two days. And then as the park grew, like, so I'm pretty young, so I probably have gone since like the late 80s, mm-hmm. like every yearly. And so like through the 90s, as like, you know, they added Hollywood Studios, and then they added Animal, like I remember going to Animal Kingdom like the day Asia opened in 99, like it was like a year after Animal Kingdom opened. And that was pretty cool. And so we actually love Animal Kingdom, by the way. I know it gets a bad rap in the Disney community, but I want to defend it. It's a great park. You should go check it out. Very beautiful. Sorry, that was off topic.
Well, you know what? We go in the summertime, and I can tell you that I have coined the term Animal Kingdom hot because I have, and I'm from St. Louis. It gets over 100 degrees here in the summer, but it gets so hot in that park in the summer. But that's, you're right. I love it. But you just have to hit Cali River Rapids.
Yeah, totally. Which I'm terrified, by the way. That's like the one type of ride I'm not a big fan of. That and Astro Orbiter.
Really?
I don't know what it is about Astro Orbiter. It gives me the spins.
You know what? I don't like it either. I said this is so funny because we were talking about this with Len, that it's higher than it looks when you get up there, and that thing, it spins faster than it, like 10 times faster than it looks like you're on the ground. And if you're my size, like I'm 6'3", it's like you need a shoehorn to get in and out of that thing.
Oh, you're 6'3". Excellent. I'm 6'5".
Oh, see, so that's why you hate it, because you can't get in and out.
Yeah, exactly. Okay, we connect, Mike.
Very good. Very nice.
So we started going every spring break because my parents are both school teachers, and so we would do the spring break trip. And luckily, they both taught at private schools, and so we had like the non-public school spring break.
Very
period.
Nice.
That was nice. I think like it's sort of it. I think this happens to most kids. That like it peaks around like probably for me it was like 13 or 14. Then it dipped a little bit as I thought it was kind of uncool.
Sure.
But then it went back up again in college. So like at college I kept going. I brought down college friends, and then now I go with my parents when my parents go, and then I go I drag my girlfriend my when I can, and then. Only probably in the last year or two, like once I started working with touring plans, like in the last year, I've started to like, I could sense it growing. or I'm fading the flame. So I went to the D23 Expo. I've been to a couple of research trips with Len and Fred. And then me and my dad took a trip in December. And then I'm actually bringing my parents out for a Disneyland trip for their first Disneyland trip ever. So they're Disney. We're hardcore Disney World people. I've done Disneyland a bunch of times now. I feel like I have a good sort of bead on the resort. And now my parents are coming out, so it should be fun. The one thing I should say about Disneyland is like, I'm pretty sure Disneyland's gonna change significantly in the next year or two with the expansion of California Adventure.
Okay.
So it's really interesting to see how that works. Like if they can make it sort of like a full second park, because Disney World like. The average length of trip expanded with the number of parks. You know what I mean?
Sure.
So the question is that Disneyland, I've heard ridiculous statistics about Disneyland being like, on an average Friday or Saturday, like 80 or 85% of the people who go are annual pass holders.
Wow.
Whereas that's like completely different than Disney World. So it's much more of a local park than a destination resort. And so it'll be interesting to see how that changes in the future. So.
Well, seeing somebody who lives in the Midwest, and I don't really enjoy flying, so we drive to Florida most of the time. And I've driven out to California myself we visited Yosemite at one point, but I've never been to Disneyland. And that's kind of the point that I really want to get out there, because I know that it's the original and that there's a lot of history there and that the attractions are different, but better in many ways. You know, I've heard that from people that I respect, and I know that it's something that every hardcore Disney fan needs to do. So I know I'm going to get out there, but it's kind of the thing you just mentioned that, you know, when you're going to drive 18, 20 hours, you almost want it to be a place where I guess maybe I'm spoiled with Disney World that, you know, you have four parks, two water parks, and you have so many other things that you can do. I mean, the resorts in themselves are destinations. So, that's kind of that thing that I think that Disneyland's trying to fight.
No, I totally understand that. Like, I trust me, I'm a hardcore Disney World person, and it's a little bit annoying that I've moved further away from it. I would just say, you know, if you have the time and you have the ability to do it, definitely think about it. If you're a hardcore Disney person, I'm sure most of the people listening to this podcast have go to Disney World as often as they can. So, you know, maybe that next trip, think about it. And you're definitely right. There are like what's cool is that if you can compare the two, like you actually see the sort of the attractions and stuff that are actually executed a little bit better in either place. Like you've never been on Indiana Jones Adventure, which is like one of the best Disney, you know, best acclaimed Disney things. And so you also have like the original Soarin', which is, I mean, it's the same, but it's, you know, it says Soared Over California and stuff. and they actually cut off that, like, you know, where the guy's talking in the beginning.
Yeah.
He's like, and welcome to Soarin', and then they cut it off in the Disney World version. And then the Disneyland version, he says, over California. But nice. Yeah, let me know in the next, let me know if you're ever planning on coming down. I'll come down and we can tour a bit together.
No, that'd be cool. That'd be awesome. It really sounds good, because I do want to get out there soon, but you know, it's just it's one of those things that I think that it puts a lot of people in a quandary when, you know, you have limited vacation time and you have that love for Disney World, like you said, and you just don't want to, you know, it's kind of, which I think that if I took my chance and went out to California, I'd really, really enjoy it and come back and sing the praises. But one of the good things about it, you know, coming up in the future, I know the Disney Cruise Line sending a ship out to LA, I believe. So that would kind of be, you know, you could do a Disney cruise and combine it with a Disneyland stay.
Right, exactly. Or if you, or if the the scheduling works out, my guess is that they're going to hold the next D23 Expo in Disneyland again. So, and that was a awesome time if you're into the Disney community. Just because I met so many cool people that I still talk to on Twitter and Facebook, like, at that event, you know. So it's if you have the, like, if you're on the edge about whether or not to go to the expo next year or planning on going to it, definitely consider it. It was a great time.
Yeah, did you expect that to be what it was? Because I know that I heard rumors of D23, and you know, there's the grumblings of the cost of joining the, you know, getting the magazine and joining, right, the club and all that. But I was, you know, sitting here at home and kind of, like you said, following along on Twitter, watching everybody out there, and it just seemed like it got better and better and better, and it was 100 times more than what I was expecting.
Right, yeah, it definitely blew away my expectations. And I think that's good, because I know it gets some flack from people, but in my opinion, like, I think they really kicked it out of the park. Like, yeah. I think they spent a lot of money on it. The exhibits were great. Like, the sort of general love in the air. It was a love in the air. It was like, it was kind of a very appreciative kind of thing. I know, like, you know, the ticket was a little bit expensive, but like, for the talent that they brought in and the sort of the level of effort they put into it, like, I mean, there are some minor scheduling issues. Like, it was hard to do, you know, the big keynote of the day and make it to some of the cooler sort of smaller rooms. And actually, some of the smaller rooms, like, were too small. Like, they should have scheduled them in the arena. Anyway, sure. Minor parts. But, and also being at Disneyland was just pretty cool. And they could obviously, being in LA, they could bring a lot of celebrities in. And I'm not too much of a celebrity person, but like, it was pretty awesome when, you know, like, Johnny Depp came on stage.
No
and
kidding.
Stuff. So,
that's what I was thinking, you know, because that's something right there. And I'm a Pirates fan, but, you know, I'm not like a huge Johnny Depp fan, but when I saw that he was there, you know, himself to announce the movie, I was like, you know, that's pretty cool.
Yeah, that was pretty ridiculous. People were freaking out. And people were even more freaking out if they had left like 10 minutes earlier because it was going on too long and they thought it was over. So, which many people did. So yeah, and just what's also really cool is just, you know, when Disney does a big expo like this, one, it's just obviously, it shows that they're trying to engage with the fans more. And I think that's the really key point. Like, they may have falters things. Like, I know, like, expo tickets are hard to get for some of their smaller events, like, or some of the smaller D23 events. Mm-hmm. And people have given them flack for that. And, you know, it's just sort of, it may not be everything that people want, but it's like, they can't expect, you know, like, basically zero engagement to go to maximum awesome engagement where, you know, they let us into all their secrets and stuff and they, you know, do everything that we've ever wanted them to do or whatever. Make us honorary Imagineers. I don't know. But I think it's good because they're sort of, you know, they're engaging us on Twitter. They're engaging us like in real life, doing expos and stuff. They've continued to hold pretty decent D23 events. And, you know, I don't know. I think it just, in general, whether you join D23 or not, I think it's just a sign that they're sort of trying to connect with fans in a digital age. And I think that's admirable.
No, I was thinking the same thing, that it seems like Disney for a while there really didn't listen to the fans, you know, the people who really were dying for information from the parks and from the company in general. But I'll say in the last year, you know, with like the Disney Parks Twitter account and the blog that Disney has.
Blog, I mean, is awesome.
That is.
Like,
I mean, so
Thomas Smith and the social media team are doing a great job, it seems like.
Oh, totally agree. And, you know, that's what Disney needs to do more of, because that's the thing that really makes me, I mean, you know, and I'm just the average guy who likes to go down to Walt Disney World with my family, but it makes it sound like I have a stake in it. Like they may be listening to what I have to say, and at least they're giving me some information each day. You know, it might not be the greatest thing. Like today, I think it was the top 10 stocking stuffers, but you know what? At least they're making the attempt and they're moving in the right direction. Totally. I think.
Right, and just any sort of olive branches that they throw the hardcore community, like the more likely we're going to evangelize, the more money we're willing to spend, you know, the more sort of times we'll visit the park. I don't know. I think it's in general it's a great thing.
Cool, me too. Well, before we get out of here, you know, if I don't ask this question, I'm going to catch it from my listeners. So you have gone on research trips with Len Testa. So give us a nugget, some kind of story, you know, something that maybe everybody would like to know about what it's really like to go on a research trip with Len, because we have a lot of Len fans.
Sure. So everything's better when Len pays.
Very nice.
So, just kidding. I went on a Vegas trip with them, and then I went on a Disneyland trip with them, and we're going to be at this WDW Today reunion thing.
Sure.
Sorry if I'm plugging another podcast. No, are you direct competitors with them?
Not quite. I think they're a little bigger than us. No, they're my favorite podcast myself, so don't worry about it.
Okay, cool. We for the Disneyland Vegas trips, they weren't too arduous, but you know, it is kind of true that, I mean, it's cool definitely going because, you know, you get to go to a Disney park and, you know, you're sort of contributing to, you know, a general sort of like research sort of collective that's like been built up over years.
Sure.
And it's really cool to sort of, at least for me, like I'm a huge data junkie and I'm an engineer. So I really like figuring things out. And what's cool is that, you know, with wait times and with, you know, all the reviews that we have to do and just like how to generally sort of help people improve their in-park experience. That's really awesome. It's added another layer to my Disney experience.
Sure.
So like I've always gone as a fan, and now that I'm going as like a researcher almost, like it's only made me appreciate the parks more, and it's actually given me like a lot of more fun things to do while I'm down there. But that said, there's a lot of like, it's not really glamorous. I mean, so the funny story that I have is we had to do counter service updates in Disneyland. What that means is that we had to eat at every single counter service restaurant in Disneyland. And what that means is that we had to try every single item on every single menu in Disneyland. So it wasn't like the nice table service. We weren't eating at the Blue Bayou every night. It was, what's interesting about Disneyland is like, because it's a much more local park and because actually they pack a lot in, they have way more varied counter service options than at Disney World. And they only have, I think this is right, they only have one table service restaurant in Disneyland, which is the Blue Bayou. That's totally a lie. They don't have many. They don't have like the Crystal Palace. They don't have, Cindy's Castle or whatever, Royal Table. But they do have a lot of, and they actually have really pretty decent counter service options, but they also have some bad ones. And there's about 14 of them. So what we had to do was we literally had to eat 4 or 5 counter service meals for lunch and dinner. So we did about 10 in one day at one point. And we only had 2 days to do this all. And so we would go to each place. We would order every one of everything varied on the menu. Like if they had a cheeseburger and a hamburger, we wouldn't order both. But what was cool is that we got to do, I think we sort of rated them in 3 ways. So we said, what is the quality, right? And I think that was A through F, where like a C is like Boston chicken, and that's decent, I guess.
Okay.
And I may have messed that up. It may be a B. But and then we do value, which is also, I think alphabet. I should just grab my book. But so we did quality, we did value, and then we did we listed the kind of food that they have. But the cool thing that we got to do is sort of special notes. So we got to be like, okay, right in Adventureland, there's this thing called one of my favorite places called the Bengal Barbecue. They offer sort of like skewers and stuff, like sort of shish kebabs and that kind of thing. Well, they have a awesome item on that menu called the Safari Skewers,
which is
bacon wrapped asparagus. It's awesome. I'm a big fan of bacon, and so we got to like be like, hey, you know, and the Disneyland book before that, it didn't have this information, and so we could be like, oh hey, if you're at the Bengal Barbecue, try the Safari Skewers. And then unfortunately though, I didn't know that we had to do all 14 when I started the day. And so we got these giant trays of food at our first place, which was I think the Crystal Palace, which is actually not the Crystal Palace, the Golden Horseshoe Review. which has an awesome stage show. Have you ever heard about the stage show? It's called Billy Hill and the Hillbillies.
No, I haven't.
It's fantastic, and people show up at locals, just show up, and we'll see them every weekend. Like it's very, very popular.
Wow.
Very different dynamic than a Disney World Entertainment place. Although I guess you have people who sort of obsess about Off Kilter or
yeah, and like Yeehaw Bob and all that. Yeah.
Oh yeah, yeah. So, it's anyway. So we got our plate of food there, and they're like, oh okay, well we're gonna go to another place after this, so you know don't eat too much. And we're like, oh, okay. So we like finished half our, you know, dishes or whatever. Then we got to the next place, and they're like, actually, we have to go to one more. So don't eat too much. And they said this late as well, and we're like, oh, okay. Well, we're already pretty full. We ended up going to 5 for lunch.
Oh, nice.
So it was pretty arduous. And you know, after 4 counter service meals, they all kind of taste the same. So, you know, it was a bit of an experience.
But, that's what I was going to say. The fifth one probably didn't get the best reviews. You know what I'm saying? Like, it's like, I don't even want seafood right now.
Yeah. Thankfully, there was at least one sane person in a group. But it was kind of cool because, like, we all tried it, and then we all sort of gave our own sort of voting. And then, you know, for counter service, we don't need to be a professional food critic because that's sort of the point it's supposed to be for, you know,
average shows. Yeah.
And so, yeah, it's not like eating at Victoria Albert's and riding Splash Mountain 50 times. it's a little bit more demanding than that.
Well, that's cool. And, it, Len's told those stories many times, and everybody that listens to our show listens to WDW today, so we've heard a lot of his stories. Cool. But it's really cool to hear it from you, Henry, because, you know, you're living it, you're crunching the numbers, and you're really working to make our trips a lot better. So if you could, before we get out of here, just one more time, how can we get a hold of Lines?
Yeah, so go to m.touringplans.com, M as in mobile. And you can also, can I even be more shameless?
No, go ahead.
Okay, so we're pretty active on Twitter, just like Mike and Ricky are. So it's twitter.com/touringplans. And we also, touringplans.com, you can get a free subscription, but we definitely think it's worth a premium subscription, so you should check us out. And then we also maintain a pretty active blog as well. It's blog.touringplans.com. And if anyone's going to be at in Disney World, we're going to be there between the 10th and the 15th of December. So we're going to be mostly following the WDW Today reunion events. But by following, it means that, you know, Fred and I are going to be stomping around the park collecting wait times to try to improve lines. So, you know, if you're in the parks, let us know. And you can just email me at Henry@touringplans or hit us up on Twitter, and maybe we can meet up.
No, that's cool, because we have a lot of folks heading down for a reunion, and you know, I'm kind of kicking myself that, you know, when Mouse Fest got canceled, I just kind of dropped the ball there, and then I scheduled a couple other trips for different times. You know, I knew something was gonna land that weekend. I mean, I knew that early, but I just dropped the ball. So you know, hope you guys have a great time, and I'm sure you're gonna meet some of our listeners down there. So Henry,
awesome. I'll definitely tell everyone that I know to listen to your podcast.
Oh, I appreciate it, because again, like I said, you guys do a lot of work for us, and you mentioned the subscription to Touring Plans. You know, think about what a Walt Disney World vacation costs. You know, when you're planning it out, your resort stay, your food, your theme park tickets, and all that. I mean, it's for the return you're going to get on that subscription to Touring Plans, well worth it to ensure a great trip.
Right. Yeah. No. I appreciate that. I think it's a great. I'm just honored to work with these guys. So I think it's a great way to help plan your vacation, and also increasingly to help like improve your vacation while you're down there.
Definitely. Well, we appreciate you coming on the show, Henry. Thanks a lot.
Cool. Thanks, Mike.
All right. And we'd encourage you to visit our website at www.beourguestpodcast.com. There we talk Disney all day, every day, and have a great time doing it. And you know we're going to be talking about Lions this week. So come on over and check it out. Also, don't forget to listen to Magical Mouse Radio on live365.com. Just visit live365.com and type in Magical Mouse Radio, and there we'll be playing your best Disney in-park audio and music. And of course, right now during the holiday season, we're playing your best Walt Disney World holiday classics. So until we're together again on Friday, we hope that you have a great week and that you work really hard. And for Henry, I'm Mike. We hope that you have a great week, and we'll see you real soon.
You've been listening to the Be Our Guest Walt Disney World Trip Planning Podcast. If you have questions, comments, or would like to be a guest on the show, please visit our website at beourguestpodcast.com. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you real soon.